computer. This is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers McBasketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers McBasketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am the host for today, Tim. You know me as Krandris McBasketball on Twitter. And I'm doing a quick solo pod. Tom is not here with us. We had some schedule conflicts, and I'm about to be traveling for a bit. So wanted to get something out to you for this week. I just recently recorded podcasts on Adrian Griffin, Terry Stotts, Rajon Rondo, Mark Jackson, mentioned Steve Clifford a bit. We're going to dig into some others. I've got a Darvin Ham one that I'm just editing, all on the feed for the Discord subscribers of the lower bowl tier or above. So all those folks, that's the $5 a month tier. In addition to getting access to exclusive channels and our film room channel and some other things, you get those bonus podcasts. And they're coming rapid fire for you these days with the Lakers looking into more candidates for their head coaching position. And today I'm going to give you a little taste of what some of those breakdowns have looked like. It'll be a little light, but we recently heard news that Kenny Atkinson and Charles Lee were two candidates that the Lakers have requested permission to interview. So the kind of analysis I'm giving you now is going to mirror some of the analysis. Well, for Mark Jackson, it got into a whole other slew of topics as well. But if you want to check out those other podcasts to get my perspective on those other candidates, go check out that feed and subscribe to our Discord channel. And you'll get to see that stuff over there. But for now, Atkinson, Charles Lee, Kenny Atkinson, current assistant coach on the Golden State Warriors staff. He was the head coach for the Brooklyn Nets for a few years until he stepped down. Let me pull up his Wikipedia page. Let me see what he did before then. Because I don't know that I remember what he was doing before that. Oh, okay. Yeah, he was a Hawks assistant for a few years, a Knicks assistant for a few years. He was an assistant in Paris in the French League for a few years in the early 2000s. So he's been an assistant for a while. He had those few years as the Brooklyn Nets head coach. After that, he spent a year on Ty Lue's staff with the Clippers. This year, he's been with the Warriors staff and is someone that we see a lot of coaches fail in roles and get fired, and then nobody wants them because they failed and they were fired and it looked bad. Atkinson stepped down, and I don't know that he's seen with the same degree of, I don't know, his time as a head coach, I think, has been painted differently than, I guess, my perspective of it by a number of people. I think more just the general consensus on him is, you know, he was a guy who took the win-loss total in Brooklyn up year after year after year, and then left. When we look at what he did, he went 20-62, won 24% of his games his first year in Brooklyn, 2016-2017. They missed the playoffs. Next year, they won 28 games, lost 54. They won 34% of their games, missed the playoffs. 2018-2019, went 42-40, so just over 500, and lost in the first round. They lost in five games in the first round. And then the following year, 28-34, and then resigned before the end of the season. But that year was certainly not on pace to finish higher than the year before. So he got out a little early, wasn't fired, but it wasn't, from my perspective, I didn't like what I was seeing. Now, I've heard things about him building a culture, getting buy-in, focusing on development, and some of those things that for a team that's really in rebuild mode were the kinds of things you want. For a team that's looking to perform and make the most of their players, I didn't see the kinds of things that you would hope for. When we look at our optimization database, and this is one that only goes from 2013 to 2020. We have the past, two seasons aren't in here because we've been revamping the approach, and we'll have that out this offseason to get the next 2 years accounted for and refine what had been calculated previously. But when we look at our optimization ratings, Quick primer on those, because I don't think I've referenced them in a bit. In the past, what we did was we had our impact metric PIPM at LeBron at B-ball index before we had our LeBron metric, and we would take that to look at player impact, and we would compare that for each individual player with what we'd expect them to be able to do based on their talent grades and our, you know, perimeter shooting, finishing, off-ball movement, playmaking, post play, roll gravity, offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding, perimeter defense, interior defense, probably missing a couple, but all of those talent areas and their roles, ran that in some machine learning to figure out, okay, for each job, guard in, you know, a shot creator role, how important is playmaking? How important is perimeter shooting and all these different things? And when you plug in the player's skills and their job, it would spit out, okay, here's what we expect them to be able to do. And that's also what we're looking to rerun this offseason now that we have new roles. We've added defensive roles and have redone our talent grades. So I'll have some updates. I don't expect it to, you know, result in gigantic shifts in the results of these calculations, but in the past we compare the actual results with what they should be able to get out of the players given their skill sets, aggregate that at the team level, and you end up seeing results that show us who's optimizing their talent the most, the least. We stack them all up. We had 7 seasons of data in here. And when you look at like the coaches that were getting the most out of players offensively, it's guys like Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Ty Lue, Mike D'Antoni, Terry Stotts was up there. Those are some of the top ones. When you look at some of the top defensive ones, Kerr, Nick Nurse, Greg Popovich, Frank Vogel, Mike Budenholzer, Quinn Snyder, these are names that make sense. Steve Clifford up there for defense. Trying to look at some others. Yeah, I'd say those are the top ones. And Taylor Jenkins in the one season we had from him graded up pretty really, really well on the defensive end as well. They match the eye test. Yeah, I'd say I like these. I think these look good. I think once we run them, they'll look a little bit better. And we'll have more years, so there'll be more of a sample as well. But when we look at these, there are only a few coaches in the database that got F grades when we stack everybody up and you know, turn the rankings into percentiles and turn the percentiles into grades. There are only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 coaches that had F optimization ratings for both offense and defense. Lionel Hollins, Byron Scott, Earl Watson, Larry Drew, and Kenny Atkinson. He was one of only 5 coaches that, according to these calculations, was massively, not setting his talent up well for success. He was getting less out of what he was given. The results were less than what he should have gotten on both sides of the ball. And there were a lot of coaches who had an F in one area and then were okay in another, or were at least below average in another. Luke Walton, F offense, D plus defense, D plus offense, F defense. I'm reading this wrong. F offense, D plus defense. There are other guys that Jim Boylan, F offense, C minus defense. Jeff Hornacek, D plus offense, F defense. Like, there were some that were bad, or like Mike Woodson for the 1 year we had was A minus offense, F defense, or Rick Carlisle, good offensive coach, not so hot on the defensive end. Like, it's hard to be an F in both areas, and Atkinson was one of the few guys who did so. And this isn't just that's just looking at the data, but when we go and look at the film, I don't like the film either. It was one of those pass the ball a lot, move the ball, and to me it almost was mistaking ball movement and pass volume with good offense. I think, you know, action volume matters, and like, it's bad to just hold on to the ball. In the Mark Jackson podcast, I talked about how his teams were at the bottom of the league when it came to passing, and at the top of the league when it came to like time of possession per touch. It's not good to have a bunch of like heavy ISO offense generally, but just the opposite of that, just passing a lot doesn't naturally mean you're going to have good offense. And I think this was one of those cases where, like, looking at those data points, they were led a little bit astray, and the action wasn't there. There was movement without action. There weren't scoring chances created. There weren't manufacturing anything. The ball screen offense wasn't targeting coverage as well. Like, there was a lot that was left to be desired about how they were running things. And I think they were saying the right things to the media. And there's, to a degree, a lack of ability from folks who are covering the teams to be able to like critically analyze some of those deeper X's and O's things, which is understandable. A lot of the folks who have that skill set are coaching teams. But this was a case where they played the media well, but the actual film doesn't look very good. The data doesn't look very good. When we look at data we have on how often they were adjusting coverages, both in the regular season and the playoffs, for his one season, in terms of like, all right, how are you defending ball screens? Did you do the same thing every single time, or were you able to switch up coverages? Same thing with off-ball screens, hands off, handoffs, ISO, post-ups, and then even zone usage. Kenny Atkinson, D for ISO, F for post-ups, D for ball screens, F for off-ball screens, F for handoffs. In the playoffs, same kind of deal. It wasn't really playing the adjustments game. Wasn't playing the tactics game defensively. And offensively, the scheme was not looking good. And so I don't like that element. I don't think he's adding much there. Right now, he's an offensive coach for the first Steve Kerr Warriors team. And to me, that doesn't mean a whole lot. That's like being an offensive coordinator for like a Ryan Day or Mike Gundy offense in football. Like, they call the plays. You're along for the ride. We've seen, Steve Kerr calls the plays. When you watch the Warriors play the Grizzlies with Mike Brown coaching the team, who was their defensive coordinator for the year, he's now the one calling the plays. It's not Atkinson stepping up and taking more charge on that end of the court. It's they've fully let the defensive coach also do the offensive end, and the offense has been a disaster. They've looked just very stagnant for long stretches of time with Kerr out due to COVID. And to me, that's damning on Kenny Atkinson. Kerr is the guy running this. And so I don't know that experience is really adding a whole lot or moving the needle for me. And so I have a lot of concerns on the scheme side. From a locker room standpoint, I mean, indications are good. Maybe there's more info that I don't have. But from what I understand, he was good in the locker room, got along with the players. This is someone that I don't know what you would really be getting, because there are other guys that are better leaders and they are coaches that are better on the scheme side. And I don't know what the pitch would be to go for Atkinson. Also, I'm not sure exactly what the pitch would be to bring him on as an assistant coach, because I don't know that he's adding anything on the offensive or defensive ends. Player development is something that had been his focus on his way up as an assistant. And as a head coach, he took over for a team that was very, very young and grew over time. Those Nets teams had really young, bad players rebuilding, and they went from like horrific, winning like 20 games to, winning 28 games, to winning a little bit more. They had D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris was on these teams. There were Jeremy Lin was over there and he was playing well. Like, there were some solid players on these teams. It wasn't that they had nobody. These weren't some of those tanking Sixers teams that just had absolutely nothing. There were some real basketball players here, and they weren't making the most of them, but they were also young and getting better, and they are not the same players then as they are today. So I can't say, it's not like he had this year Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell and Joe Harris and whatnot. It was those guys then. But from a development standpoint, it's important to understand that we should expect more growth for young players. That is just the way it is. Guys, when they come into the league, for a lot of skill sets, for most skill sets, they grow the most their youngest years in the league. And then once they get to around 26, 27, 28, it kind of plateaus a bit. And then from that point forward, there's a slow decline that accelerates over time. So, by your early 30s, mid-30s, you should be getting worse in each of those skill sets by more than you were as a 29-year-old, as a 30-year-old, as a 28-year-old. So there's this curve that it climbs up, it flattens out a bit, and then it slowly starts to go down until it's really traveling fast in a downward direction. Atkinson took over a team that was very, very far to the left on the curve, so we would expect them to grow a lot. And looking at using that same kind of optimization type of data, looking at the skill sets for players, looking at their individual skills in comparing what they were expected to do from a growth standpoint to what they actually did, his teams were underperforming their growth, which was surprising but and concerning to me. But I think that that's really hard to wrap your mind around without the data, is like just a young team supposed to get better. And they probably should have gotten better than we even saw from them. And how much of that is just he wasn't, you know, running good sets and they weren't, you know, operating in a smart way? I don't know. But at least from that standpoint, and I'm interested to see how this looks once we like rerun the numbers this offseason, there's nothing there that makes me really buy into some of these accepted narratives about him as a coach. So I don't think that he's necessarily going to hurt the team if brought on in an assistant capacity, but I'm not excited about his name being on this list. I don't want him to be the head coach. I think there are better options. I'm not sure what the pitch would be for the Lakers to go after him. And I don't know. I'm just selling. I'm not buying this. I don't. The film stinks. The data stinks. The narratives were carefully crafted, but I don't buy into. The team success isn't even there. So I don't like it. He, in his job right now, we're seeing like right now in the playoffs, things not go well when, you know, Steve Kerr's out and he needs to step up in game. It's just not there. So not a big fan of that.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Moving on to Charles Lee. He's someone who is an assistant on the Milwaukee Bucks coaching staff. Let's take a look. Charles Lee NBA. Charles Lee basketball. He was on the Hawks staff as well. Yeah. So he was a coach for Bucknell as an assistant for a few seasons and then joined Mike Budenholzer's staff on the Atlanta Hawks. And then has stayed with him for the Milwaukee years as well. I talked to some folks who cover the Bucks and was able to get some intel on him and also Darvin Ham. For Lee specifically, he's responsible for the team's offensive ATO plays, which are very good and have been elite from an expected efficiency standpoint for seasons, for multiple years. Looking at the second spectrum data, they've been top of class in this area, and they've been the best team, the most consistent elite team. They've been the only consistent elite team for like 4 or 5 years in this area. So that is largely on Lee, I was told. I was told he was also to some degree, not quite sure exactly how much, but in charge of the Bucks offense, more of a coordinator kind of role for that. And so I've spoken in the past about when we talked about him, I like the Bucks offense. It's simple, but they do a good job creating and attacking gaps. They do a good job making good use of Giannis, which I think, you know, AD isn't Giannis, but there are some similarities there that I can see translating over. I can see Giannis and LeBron in certain ways are similar as well. So a lot of what they've done to set him up well for success, I think translate to the Lakers guys and setting them up well for success. So I like their general setup. It's simple, but it's smart. There are areas for improvement, but it's a good, you know, it's better than if you can tell me they're going to have great ATOs and a smart, simple offense that's easy to catch on to and uses guys well and makes good use of like non-shooters. I can get behind that. We also saw in the Boston-Milwaukee series how the Bucks were able to counter post help really, really well when Boston tried to send extra bodies at Giannis when he was posting up. So that is encouraging to me. That translates over well to the Lakers team. I like that. The offensive adjustments for the Bucks in previous years had not been good. They've been a good defensive adjustment team and had gotten a lot of crap for sticking with drop coverage. And I think Bud, to an extent, is a little stubborn in that respect. Between him and Ham, they would stick to the drop a little bit too much, but they've really gotten past that more recently. So, but that's not Lee. There are things I like about their defense that I just don't think apply to him. There are things I don't like about their rotation minutes, and they've had issues with that in previous years in the playoffs. That also really doesn't apply here to Lee. I think that's a Bud thing. So it's really about the offense, and I was told of the two Milwaukee assistants, Ham is the one with more... he's better with the players. I didn't hear that Lee was bad with the players, but I heard that Ham was, he had a lot of gravitas within the locker room and commanded a lot of respect. And he was more the Phil Handy in terms of locker room, you know, working with the players, among the two assistants within Milwaukee. So not necessarily a bad thing for Lee, but you know, that's certainly something you want to have. That would be helpful. That really matters. So that's interesting to know. Looking at the data, again, that optimization data, Bud has a C+ for offensive optimization between his Atlanta and Milwaukee days, but the Bucks days, and we only had 2 years in the sample. Remember, we don't have the past two seasons. Those first 2 years in Milwaukee were elite years from an offensive optimization standpoint. And so I don't know if Lee had been running the offense for the Hawks years, or you just took over recently with Milwaukee or at some point during Milwaukee, but their Milwaukee years were awesome. And the Hawks years started good at the very beginning of the sample, 2013, 2014, and they quickly went down. So that's interesting to know, but recent great success. And the recent stuff's, I think, more what we care about here. And it looks good. So Lee, for me, if I'm going to pull up my tiers and let me go into the Discord, I've been updating my list in there. Let's see. Okay, yeah. My updated tiers, I have Lee in my tier 3 with Fizdale, Clifford, Stotts. I have Ham in tier 2, but I see Lee as a tier 3 guy. We know he's going to add value on one side of the ball. And just like the other guys on that list, Fizdale offense, Clifford defense with some offense, and then Stotts offense. For him, it comes down to, like, what do we get on the other end of the court? And I don't know what to expect. I'm not making any assumptions there because we know there are other guys. There's a head coach and a coordinator in Milwaukee responsible for the defensive side of the ball, and Lee is neither of those. So don't know what to expect there, but, you know, him plus a strong defensive coordinator, just like Terry Stotts plus, like if you can give me Lee and Clifford or Stotts and Clifford or Fizdale and Clifford, I think that's a good combo. Like Lee and Ham, which I don't think they both come over and leave the Bucks, but, you know, something like that. There are combinations here within the tier 2 and 3 guys where them plus another one of them can yield you a really good staff because you've got an offensive specialist and a defensive specialist. And I think that's really what you're looking for. So that's what I've got on Lee. That's what I've got on Atkinson. Atkinson does not make the top 3, does not make the top 4 tiers for me. He's not someone I'd have as a finalist or close to a finalist. But that's what we got for today. We'll stay up to speed on who the Lakers are looking into, who they're interviewing. I'll dig into the film. I'll look at the data, and I will keep you appraised as to what that's looking like. I, again, will be traveling moving forward. So in terms of a pod next week, I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but we'll try to find a time to make that happen. I'll be active within the Discord, of course, in talking through things there, even if I'm not able to do like an emergency pod or something like that. So definitely check that out. Again, I did pods on Mark Jackson, Terry Stotts, Rajon Rondo. Steve Clifford was mentioned in there. I'm forgetting a name. Who else was it? Adrian Griffin, another really, really intriguing candidate. You can check out my thoughts on those at our separate podcast feed for the Discord folks that are in that lowerable tier or above. And speaking of those folks, wanted to say a quick thank you for all of them for supporting what we're doing over here. To Mike H for generously supporting the pod as an arena sponsor. To Zach Harris, QDaddyO, iPod Shuffle, Romario, and Chamber for living the high life with us in the owner's box. And then also to our courtside and lower bowl crew who support what we do here. It really keeps us going. If you want to get in on that action, DM me, DM Tom, DM the Lakers X Pod or the Lakers Sex Pod on Twitter, and send us a 5-star review of the podcast, and we can get you into that Discord group. Alternatively, if you check out the link that's in my bio, you can go to a page that outlines those instructions I just gave, and then also a number of other, you know, all of the different tiers that we have within the group, and what does it mean to be an arena sponsor? What do you get for being in the owner's box? What do you get for courtside? What do you get for lower bowl? We're creating value. We're giving you those extra experiences to make it so much better to be a Lakers fan than just listening to the pods we're doing here and what you see from me on Twitter. It's way more engagement, great folks in there. We have awesome discussions. We've got like content creators in there that just aren't public content creators, but they give us excellent analysis within that group. So it's definitely a great group. Definitely reach out and try to join that. That is all I have for you today. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I will catch you next time here on the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. See you.